Click on that, and this will be audio. So if you want to make funny faces at me the entire time, please feel free. We won't be recording the visual, just the audio for our meeting open requirement, Open Meetings Act requirements. Okay, Miranda, would you like to go ahead and call the meeting to order?
Sure, I'll call the meeting to order at 10 a.m.
Okay, we'll go ahead and do a roll call. Miranda Shaik.
I'm here.
Janet Claire.
Here.
Esther Curry.
Here.
Amanda Doherty. Betsy Mahoney.
Here.
Jill Pfeiffer.
Here.
And Diane Yeoman.
Here.
Okay, thank you so much, everyone. Okay, so the first thing that I have is a share update. I am so pleased to announce that we are starting on the Aspen project. And so we've done a kickoff implementation meeting with Bywater Solutions. They've started getting us set up with just access to our database, reviewing the different e-resources that are available through our members, and starting some help desk tickets with both vendors and us, so they make sure that they have all the information that they need, including like some test accounts, for example. So we are reaching out to those libraries that are interested, that have signed up, that we're interested in possibly going first, kind of our guinea pigs, if you will. And so we've sent out letters just explaining the process and the tentative timeline. And we've had a few people who said, well, maybe they didn't want to be part of that first group. They had some other obligations or projects going on, or some changes with staffing. And so that's totally fine. If during this process you've signed up for Aspen and you're not quite ready for that project, we can push it back just a little bit. This first test group, it's a lot of our cataloging libraries, and so we really want a lot of feedback as they start testing this new system. If the roll-ups aren't working properly, the Ferberization, if the placards aren't appearing like you expect, or you have feedback on our training, we really want to hear that so we can continue to improve as we bring it out for people who want it. And so that's the biggest update that I had for today. Does anybody on the share team have anything that they'd like to add for an update? Okay, hearing none. And I see a note here from Joel that he got the email to and excited to go be our one of our guinea pigs at Muskuta. So thank you so much, Joel. Okay, so first step on the agenda, and I know why you're so excited to be here today to talk about this, is the explanation of our fee scale proposals. The IHLS finance department and the share staff did a review of our financial forecasting with some typical assumptions that our revenues would probably increase about 1 to 2% per year, but our expenditures are going to increase at least 3% over the next few years. And with that, we realized that we're going to start going into a deficit this fiscal year. And so our budget, as actually our expenditures are over our revenues by a little bit. And so in the next few years, what will happen is we're going to start dipping in to our operating cash. Now, that's a benchmark that the Share Finance and Policy Committee has set of 3 to 6 months of operating expenses that we have cash on hand, especially at the first of the month when those first big bills come due. Anytime we dip either below 3 months or over 6 months, it triggers an automatic review of our membership fees to make sure that we're being fiscally responsible. And so this was not necessarily due to that 3 to 6 months benchmark. It is specifically because we do this on a 3-year cycle. We're actually into year four. And so since the last time we reviewed member fees or made any increases to our fee scale. So with the IHLS finance department, we did that analysis in the forecast, anticipating that we would need an additional $240,000 per year to continue to run at the same level. We also were looking at ways to trim our existing budget, and we were looking at the different options that are available. And so when we started talking about fees, we also started talking about what would be the best for the majority of our members. When we started those discussions, we did send out a member survey to directors just to kind of gauge where people were at, and it was very split. So there are two philosophies that I think that the Share Finance and Policy Committee has been toying with. One that is members who prefer to pay for what they need. And so that might be what I kind of call the more traditional model or the a la carte basis. The second philosophy, and where we've gotten a lot of feedback, is that we pride ourselves on having this amazing technology at a price that's effective for everyone. And the more that we move to this a la carte model, the more that we're starting to see haves and have nots. And that is a challenge because we need to meet the majority of members where they are. And so the Share Finance and Policy Committee has discussed this at length. We had two in-person meetings that were all-day meetings. We had an additional virtual meeting to discuss it. And I think the consensus was that we need to talk to our members to find out what you all want, where you'd like to see this group go, and get some feedback based on actual data instead of just the philosophy. And so that's why we prepared those two proposals so you can see. Now, with the, I'm so sorry, excuse me, just one moment. With those two proposals, the first is the traditional model. And just to clarify, that is just to meet that obligation of the anticipated deficit that we'll need $240,000 per year. That is not necessarily adding in any additional services like the Aspen Project, for example. So I do want to make that clear. So sorry about that. When we started talking about it, we realized that there might be an opportunity to add in additional services like Cloud Library and Aspen. It would be a little bit more for some libraries, but we also started seeing the benefits of doing that. And the benefits were specific that it would be, the cost would be spread among more members. And then also, we're already going to see kind of a large increase, so you might as well get your money's worth. But again, we've still had it very split between libraries that want to keep costs down versus libraries that maybe that are larger, that understand the responsibility that comes with having a little bit more financial leverage to enhance the group. And so I want to just note that as we were looking at these proposals, tried to be very protective of our smallest libraries with the smallest revenue. And when I say smallest, I mean specifically libraries that have a reported tax draw of under $100,000. And you'll probably see that in the proposals that were sent out. If you view instead of by alphabetical, where you can look up your library, you can actually see it by revenue. I'm trying to make those increases less burdensome for those libraries, because we were getting some feedback that did say, you know, if we do this, I might have to close my doors. I mean, it's that dire for some libraries. And so we also started seeing that depending on where you were on the scale, you might start to see some very large increases. And so that's why I sent out a specific invitation to those libraries that were seeing a larger increase. I wanted to make sure that you all were available for these meetings and you could participate in the conversation, especially if that's going to cause a hardship for your library. Now, just to clarify, this change will be sent to members for review in the fall, later in the fall. It's actually fall now, which is exciting for me. And then it will go out for our annual meeting, which is typically held in January, and then for a vote. So just to give you all a timeline of when that would happen. So nothing would actually take place until, which is our fiscal year 2025, which is July of 2024. So still quite a ways away. We wanted to make sure that you all have plenty of time for planning. So that being said, I do see some notes here in the chat. Beth Bendeley asks, what does the traditional fee include? The traditional fee is made up of two parts. One is the what we call the basic fee, which is based on your enrollment for your students, Beth, or for publics by revenue. There's also a second fee that's per agency, which is $150. That proposal would increase the membership fee to $200, and then the algorithms for either the revenue or enrollments would increase. That does not include any modules. There's a separate fee for Cloud Library and a separate fee for Aspen. When we talk about the traditional model, there's also a separate fee for cataloging. We did discuss the inclusive model, which would be adding Aspen and Cloud Library. For that model, cataloging would still be a separate fee. John,
I think we lost you, Cassie.
Cassie.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Can you all hear me now?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I don't know what happened there. Thank you. So I don't know where I lost audio.
You were just about
maybe
to
where
talk
Bobby.
About my comment on there.
Oh, okay. That he had said that he'd hate the small libraries to when the small libraries to get less, even if that means that he'd like the fees for his library to go up a bit more. Bobby asks what the comparison is.
Yeah.
And so the comparison would be between the traditional model, which is the basic fee, and the membership fee, plus each item. Like I said, the a la carte model where Cloud Library and Aspen would be separate. Cataloging fees would be separate on the traditional model, but also the comparison model is an inclusive model that would include Cloud Library and Aspen, but it would not include cataloging. That would still be a separate fee. And so on those proposals, I have a comparison of in fiscal 25, what your library's cost would be with the traditional model, what your library's cost would be with the inclusive model, and just to really put apples to apples, what your library's cost would be with the traditional model for everything, including Aspen and Cloud Library. So the traditional model, I've used what your existing selections are. And when I say existing selections, I mean if you already opt into Cloud Library, for example. For the comparison, that apples to apples model, that's not a real, it's not a true model necessarily. It's just to compare what you'd get between the inclusive versus the a la carte and how those compare. It does include, so if you have SIP 2 or other modules, the traditional model would include that. It also is included in the inclusive model as well. And so that would be just an included fee in the inclusive model. Yeah. And so Joel asks, Muscuda's numbers are all about the same because you have Cloud and Aspen already. Yes, that is correct. Where can we see what we are paying this year? Oh, that's a great question, John. I would be happy to provide that to you. It would be on your share annual agreement that we sent out earlier in the spring, but I could send that out to you. I'll make a note to do so.
That's right. I can Google it in my email inbox.
Okay. Okay, so that is the explanation of the fee scale proposals and how we got to this, the explanation of why we needed it and the proposals of the different philosophies. From anybody on the Share Finance and Policy Committee, do you have anything that you'd like to add that maybe I've missed?
Kathy, it's Jill. I just wanted to kind of reiterate what Joel was saying. I think when you look at the proposals that are there, the libraries like Joel and like myself who are paying for modules like telephony and paying for cloud library, like the more modules that you're currently paying for, the less of an increase you're seeing in this all-inclusive fee structure, because you're already paying for those things. And now it's just costing you less because it's being divided amongst all the libraries. So, you know, where that traditional model is just exactly what we're doing right now. Everything's the same, you know, you just keep on, you know, picking what you want or don't want. But either way, even in that traditional model, the fees still need to go up because they haven't gone up in 4 years. And so, you know, either way, even if we stay for traditional model, people are still going to see an increase in their fees because that's just what has to happen to meet what the bill is. So, but for people who are seeing wide swings in percentages where some people's fees are going up a little, but some people's fees are going up a lot, it's probably because those whose are going up a lot don't use a lot of the modules currently, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So it looks like Bobby has said that they would be looking at a 38% increase, and she doesn't know how they can absorb that. And that is definitely one of the biggest concerns that I think that the Share Finance and Policy Committee had, Bobby. And so that's something that we're very mindful of. I want to go into the data just to see a comparison of what it would be with the fiscal 25 traditional versus inclusive, if you don't mind, if we use your library as maybe an example. Would that be okay?
Hey, Cassie. Sorry, yeah. One quick thing to Ann Chandler's comment that she just made. And I don't think you mentioned it, that the IHLS board is giving us, was it $50,000?
It is an additional $50,000. They actually normally in prior years have transferred over $250,000 as their portion to the share budget. They did increase that to $300,000 this year.
But that $50,000 specifically went to the Aspen project, correct?
Not necessarily. It is because the share budget is managed by the Share Finance. But I'm going to be very circular on how I answer that. And so it's how the Share Finance and Policy Committee decides to use that money and allocate it. But the committee did reach out to Leslie Bednar to discuss it based on the Aspen project. And so I think Janet Claire was one of the leaders of doing that. And so I think the committee has felt pretty strongly that it will go towards the Aspen project. So Ann Chandler, thank you, Ann, for this comment. Share is a valuable program and meets patron and library needs. Then, so it's important not to discriminate against the smaller libraries or libraries that cannot afford the valuable services. There are ways for Share to cut some expenditures so all libraries can be included, and asking for IHLS to support. So which, to Jill's point. We have reviewed the current budget. And so one of the things that we have always known is that we're on a very thin margin. So we have not significantly increased staff. We're still doing the same work with the same amount of staff. And so there were not significant savings in our budget because, of course, staffing is our primary budget. One of the things that I do want to make clear is that the Share Finance and Policy Committee reviews the budget every year. There are some things as IHLS employees that they do not have control over, and that is benefits for Share staff, salaries for Share staff. That is set by the IHLS. finance department that reviews that every year that goes to the IHLS finance department and the IHLS board of trustees. We don't have an option where one type of employee at IHLS gets a different salary grade or benefit than another IHLS employee. So that's not something that they have control over. And so that's something that I did want to point out as well. And so, Bobby, we will circle back to your library as an example, but there are a few more comments coming in that I'm just going to point out. Ryan, is there a way to move the increased costs over the next few years instead of having it hit all at once? That is a possibility. That's something that we can still consider. That none of this is set in stone, and it won't be until it goes out for a full evaluation and review by membership in advance of a vote. John says that he knows that the IHLS board was concerned about some libraries getting Aspen, but not others. That is correct. There was a very big push by the IHLS board of trustees. Again, that philosophy of not setting this up so that there are have and have nots. But we also realized that a lot of our members were very concerned about cost and keeping costs down. So we're trying to find a balance between that. And that's why we're trying to make sure that we bring this to you all before making any decisions on how to move forward. And then, and I'm sorry, Rhonda, I got my numbers wrong. She's corrected me that IHLS increased its contribution from 300,000 to 350,000 that it contributed in prior years. I'm so sorry I messed up those numbers. Thank you for correcting me, Rhonda. Okay, so we're going to go back to Vespasian Warner. Give me just one moment to pull their data. So Bobby, it looks like for the proposals, it would be an increase for the traditional model of about 24% from the fiscal year 2024, keeping everything the same. It would be for the inclusive model, it would be about a 35% increase, again, where that would be inclusive. And I just wanted to compare because, again, that apples to apples, that if you did decide to continue and wanted to include Aspen and Cloud Library, and I'm not sure if you have Cloud Library now. Let me look at that. Let's see. Sorry, I got to go back. I apologize.
Bobby said in chat that they do not.
Oh, okay. So that's probably, again, like Jill had mentioned, you're maybe seeing a larger increase. But if you did add Cloud Library and Aspen, it would be a comparison of your total from, so just to give some people some perspective on numbers, that would be $16,331 for a traditional model, $17,735 for the inclusive model. But if you did decide that you wanted to add Aspen and Cloud Library, again, so I could kind of have it compare apples to apples, it would be $18,831. So your best deal for everything would be the inclusive model at $17,735. But it's still, you're correct, it's still going to be more than the $16,331. That is absolutely correct. And thank you for clarifying that, Bobby. So Joel says that he remembers there being a push for existing cloud libraries to dedicate additional funds. Would that help with this or help with that need or increase it with additional patrons being able to access the collection? So that is a great question, Joel. There is still a need for collection development in the Cloud Library group. And so the libraries that do not have Cloud Library or any other type of consortium is going to make a huge difference. I do not think we're going to see a large increase on our traditional model where it's not the pay-per-use. Pay-per-use is a separate, kind of a separate animal. But I do think that we would see an uptick for patrons using Cloud Library, but I don't think it'll be super significant because a lot of the larger libraries, like for example, Bobby, you probably have an Overdrive Consortia or Hoopla. And so that is not through, you know, the share umbrella. And so I think that there would be a small increase, but I think it's the biggest impact is going to be for our smaller libraries who do not have anything. But the models have built in additional funds for Cloud Library. When we evaluated, you know, what other libraries are paying to, like, for example, an Overdrive Consortium, I mean, it was clear of why we were seeing having kind of a struggle of managing our holds, because the larger libraries are not paying nearly what they would pay to maybe one of the Overdrive Consortia. And our smaller libraries are actually probably paying more than what they'd pay to an Overdrive type product or Hoopla even. And so there was definitely a need to evaluate that as well. And that's part of the overall proposals. So the pay-per-use, we would see an increase in pay-per-use, and that's just the nature of that particular product. One of the good things about Cloud Library is now that everything is going to be included in the Aspen, your patrons are going to be able to see what, excuse me, through the OPAC, what's in the different platforms, and they can just choose which is available first. And so whether it's a, maybe it's a title that doesn't have as many holds in one platform versus the other, or they say, hey, I'm an Overdrive person, I only want to use my Libby app, they're going to always select that one. It's just what they prefer, but they'll be able to see both. Okay. Do you know, and Lisa asks, do you know of any grants that we could apply for that may assist us with paying for this service? With the 35% increase, this will cause us to struggle to adjust our budget to allow for the increase. A very, very small library with a budget of under 50,000. And so I don't, Lisa, the person who's doing our implementation also consults with us for grants. And so we did not see any grants that would be eligible of adding a service like this, unfortunately. But I don't know. I would be happy to use your library as an example, if that would be okay with you, and just put out some numbers so we can kind of see how it would compare for you. And so I don't want to all of the information is in the PDFs that were included that are also on the share website. But I don't want to put that out until Lisa, until you give permission. Oh, any assistance you can do would be greatly appreciated. And Lisa, I'm so sorry. What library are you with? I can't remember off the top of my head. Okay, so if I could look at Stonington, because one of the things that we did was really try to protect the libraries under $100,000, which you would be part of that. So I want to use your library as an example, if that would be okay, and kind of see how it compares. And it very well may be one of those circumstances where if you didn't have Cloud Library or signed up for Aspen, you might see a larger increase. So it looks like for your... Let's go back. I'm sorry, I was in the wrong screen. So it looks like you do have cloud. So your traditional model, you would see a total of about 7% increase for the traditional model. So it'd bring your fee to $1,800. And you would still, obviously, that would be including Cloud Library since you've already selected that. If you moved to the inclusive model, you would actually see your fee go to $1,700. And you'd also get Aspen with that. And the reason that that happened is because there are some libraries that did not have Cloud Library or has not selected Aspen. And for the smallest libraries, we were trying to keep their rates low. And so the libraries that are already participating in some services actually saw it's actually better to go with the more inclusive model. So you would see a very minimal increase. And so that's what I meant when I said that we were trying to be very mindful of our libraries that have the smallest budgets. Better in terms of services offered, but the cost is still increased. Yes, Ryan asks from Taylorville. Yes, that is correct. It would be a 1% increase for the inclusive model versus a 7% increase for the traditional model. And Bobby states that she knows that they have a larger budget, but they have larger expenses as well. And like everyone else, their costs are going up and they've had to cut staff positions and hours to cover costs. Bobby, I am very aware of that as well. Yes. Okay, and I had missed a comment from Anne. What is Rails doing with their share program? And Anne, they don't have share as we think of it here down south in Rails. They work with different library automation groups like SWAN and Prairie Cat and CCS and RSA. So there's actually quite a few different consortia up north that are affiliated with Rails. They are moving, so no consortia are under the umbrella of Rails, but that is something that is dependent on what their members need. It tends to be geographically focused, but I think that the Rails, they're trying to provide data comparing the different groups, which is actually to our benefit because I will be evaluating what our colleagues to the north charge for membership in comparison to share. We did that year before last. We actually did that as part of a project that they were working on. And it was very clear that we do it very well and very cost efficiently between the partnership between IHLS and SHARE, having such a large group that works together.
I would also point out that in some of those consortiums and Rails, you've got a larger proportion of libraries with over $1 million budgets, where yes, we only have maybe two or one. They'll have maybe 15 or more. And so that obviously helps defray the costs because you have libraries with bigger budgets able to pay more into their ILS, you know, and their automation consortium. So that goes a long way as well. And it's something we just don't have.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. So Lisa asks about getting Aspen for a lesser amount. So she asks, is it not too late to sign up for Aspen? So this year, Aspen is a separate fee at $250. And so if we move forward with the traditional model next year, that will be again just an additional $250. So at your Lisa, for your size library. I'm sorry, I didn't actually answer your question. If you did not sign up for Aspen, it is not too late. We would probably have you start a little bit later in the fiscal year. And so we're kind of considering this first year almost like an implementation fee to get you set up and started, since it would not be a full year. But the cost would be, we have a scale that depending on which type of proposal that we go with for fiscal 2025, we'll either have the scale for an add-on cost or it'll be rolled into that inclusive model. Okay, and Bobby says there are 14 libraries with budgets of 1 million plus. That is, that is correct. I think I don't want to pick on Swan because they actually are probably one of the more active consortia that works with us and have been so willing to share their staff time and expertise, especially when it comes to Aspen. But they have, I'm speaking certainly off the top of my head. I think that the majority of their libraries are 1 million plus, and they have just at 100 libraries. So Ryan asks, has Cher considered going red for a year or two and then falling back on savings to cover the costs to member libraries, or is this not an option? That is something that we have considered. There was just a concern dipping underneath the 3 to 6 month benchmark that had been set up. But that is something that we could certainly discuss as well. Our estimates put us, again, we'll go into a deficit this year. And so within probably about 3 years, we would be we would burn through our operating cash within about 3 years.
But I would also add, even if we do that, and we ultimately end up where we are, which is that at some point the libraries have to absorb the burden, of just the fees increasing, just like everything else is increasing. And, we can potentially do something like that, but at the end of the day, the libraries are going to have to try and figure out a way to work with whatever plan is best for them, knowing that
Right.
whichever plan it is, there will be an increase.
And he says that it gives libraries more time to absorb the burden, which is the major issue. And so it kind of sounds like Ryan, and please correct me if I'm misunderstanding, that maybe we could try to do something that staggers increases, especially for libraries that are seeing a large bump, to maybe roll it to ease it in versus all at once. And I think that's certainly something that I think that we have tentatively discussed. We have not do not have a plan for that at this point, but that's certainly something we can consider. So John says that he understood holding the line on fees during COVID, but not raising fees for 4 years, then raising by a lot is disruptive. We would have done better with small annual increases. And I think that's something that the Share Finance and Policy Committee did also discuss as well. Yeah. And Ryan said that he was just shooting out ideas, which is much appreciated. And that's why we're all here. Yeah. Thank you.
Remind me, other people on the finance committee, didn't we do an increase many years ago that was staggered? Does anybody,
This
Miranda or Diane, remember?
is Esther. I think we have, I think most of the time in the past, we have done incremental, but set it up at a three-year stage so people, because the goal has always kind of been we want to have something set for a 3 year period so people can budget around that. So I think in the past we have done, okay, in over 3 years we're going to re raise it by X percent each year. And I think we've done that a couple of times. So three, so I don't know. We've been doing this for a long time now.
We have been doing it for a long time, and you're right, Esther. It has always been in a staggered amount over normally a 3 year period because we like to give people 3 years of here's your adjustment time.
So, John Howard at Muhammad says that maybe we should consider a percentage cap on the increase in a single year. And he asks, are we able to look at the overall budget projections that the Finance Committee is working with? And so we do have some graphics that we had provided on the SHARE website and specific numbers. I could probably send those out to you. Yeah. So thank you, Jace, for inserting that link. Of what it came out to was about 240,000 per year. when we split over the 3 years. So that was the deficit that we were looking at. So that would be there were some, and as soon as I say that, I'm starting to remember, because we also were looking at how that would be impacted by the adding in Aspen for the inclusive model, and then increases for Cloud Library as well. So Beth says, as a school district, I'm looking at 19% increase for the traditional model and 26 for the inclusive. Both are not feasible for us. So Beth, do you think that if we did some type of a staggered model, that that would be better absorbed by your school district? And so Bobby asks if we could compare the 2023 fees, and I would be happy to send that to you, Bobby. And Beth says, yes, she thinks it would be better because smaller increases over time, and then you can, she can get the district on board with that. Yeah.
Cassie, this is Jill. Is it possible? So certain libraries are not seeing as big of an increase as other. Is it possible that for the certain libraries that are, depending on what how the vote goes, that only those libraries can have staggered increases, but if a library thinks that they can meet whatever their new benchmark fee is, like, it sounds slightly nightmarish for the finance team at IHLS, but I'm just wondering, I mean, would we consider an approach like that where maybe there's 40 libraries who are doing it as a graduated thing, you know, and other libraries that are not?
Yeah, that was one of the things that I had looked at, that maybe, like John had mentioned, maybe having a cap, and it probably would be, if you fall into this bucket, this is what we're going to do, whether you can afford to pay the higher fee or not, that over a certain percentage, we would probably say that it would be a staggered increase. That I think that we have discussed doing that. But what's going to happen in year three is, because you're not generating the revenue in year one, it's going, year three is going to be higher for everyone. And so that's something that we would have to kind of bake in to the algorithms, and we have not done that yet. And so John asks, do we ever look at metrics just as the fee to population, compare what the burden of share is by library? I do have those metrics, John. I don't, as I, the Finance and Policy Committee can attest to, when I tried to send out data in a spreadsheet, they had to blow it up to like 176,000% to be able to see it. So I was trying to focus on what the most relevant information is, which would be a comparison of proposal A, or the inclusive proposal, the traditional proposal, and that apples to apples of what you would pay for everything using that traditional model. But I can tell you, so if I can use Muhammad as an example, it looks like for the let's see, I'm trying to look at your different, the different data for Muhammad.
Cassandra, if I could add a little bit there, that is something we have explored in the past. We have explored pretty much every metric that there is. And I think what we've run into with population and specifically is that, say, my population of about 37,000 is equal to some in the Metro East area, but their budgets are double or triple what mine are, because we are, you know, a lot of rural, not as high property taxes, or tax capped, you know, all of those other factors that just comparing population to population doesn't give a good financial image, because, you know, like I said, our financial situation is completely different than some in, say, the Metro East area. So, you know, right. I think why we kind of have focused on the actual budgetary issues, because a budget is a budget, and right. Basing it on that is probably the most solid thing. I mean, and at one point we threw in the EAVs and all of that. It just got to be a mathematical nightmare.
Yeah. One of the things, I must have misunderstood that question of population, because I was thinking of like the population, like what is the percentage of what you pay of the share budget as a whole, of like your slice of the overall share pie, John. So I have done that for our existing membership. I have not done that for our proposals, but I certainly could. And so what I did do is look at the like percentage of your overall overall budget. So like your percent of your annual tax draw would be 1.36%. And so those algorithms kind of are based on that. And so, but there are some libraries that it's, you know, upwards of 10 or 12% of their overall annual budget. Again, that's where wanting to make sure that the libraries with the lower amount of revenue were not seeing large increases. We also did it population of students, like what would you be paying for share per student? And I think that's a very valuable piece of data if you're having to make that argument to a district. So for example, Beth, back to your question, I do have that data. So if you'd like to see that on the different proposals, I'd be happy to provide it. So I've got some more comments coming in. Would anybody else like to maybe read the comments as we're going through, and then I can maybe start to make sure that I don't miss anything?
I can read them if you want.
That'd be great, Jace. Thank you.
Okay, so we've got from Ann Chandler, school district budgets are of great concern. The federal monies the schools have been receiving will no longer be available. Superintendents are really concerned about future income versus the increase in expenses.
Yes, that's absolutely true.
From John, we've got, bear in mind, I am a huge fan of SHARE and a believer in its value. I just want to help find a way that we don't lose libraries.
Yes, absolutely.
I agree with John, the program is so valuable, but if program outprices libraries and they leave, the cost for all will go up more.
Yeah. One of the things that we did in our last fee increase is we compared, when we talk about comparing our share fees with a library budget, what we do is so different. Not so different, but you all are our customers, whereas your patrons are your customers. And so the budgets just don't necessarily look the same. And so we actually reached out to some of our consortia colleagues, both here in Illinois and then also, you know, like Mobius in Missouri or Evergreen, Indiana, and really got a comparison. And we saw that we generally offer the biggest bang for the buck. This time we're also have reached out to Polaris to get an idea, especially for our largest libraries. What would someone as a new customer for Polaris pay coming in? So make sure that we're not outpricing ourselves, to make sure that we're not overreaching. And I know that can be really difficult, knowing that we frankly feel like we're a better deal than just Polaris on its own. But that is something that we want to be aware of. And so thank you for those comments.
From Bobby, we have, I also think Share is a wonderful resource and have shared cataloging and patron databases is a boon for our patrons. However, we have to be able to afford it.
Yes, absolutely.
From Sandy West, we have, has Share admin scheduled any informational meetings with school districts at regional offices so school and board or school board and school administration can see the products being offered as an inclusive product versus what they are currently receiving? I now see the information on the website is great, but have a voice of knowledge speaks volumes to stakeholders.
Sandy, that's a great question. We have not, other than these town halls, we have not, but that's certainly something that we would be happy to speak to any administrators for our school districts. For any school district that was seeing a large increase, and we actually were comparing not just by location, but by district. Beth is kind of in an unusual camp because she does have several locations. And with the inclusive model, one of the things that when you start looking at a fee per location instead of the agency fees, that hit them a little bit harder, and we tried to balance the proposals because of that. But that's certainly something that I'd be happy to speak to any of the administrators about and to go over the options. But at this point, it's kind of a step removed. So, you know, we reach out to our district librarians and our library directors, but I don't necessarily have easy access to their administrators. And so, Beth, I think I see a note here that yes, you'd like the per student to make sure I'm understanding that comment so I can follow up. The per student for Share for each proposal.
She said yes in the chat again.
Okay, thank you. I will send that to you after our meeting today.
And it looks like John agrees. It says that's a great metric, cost per student. And then we've got, are there libraries out there that we can recruit to lower the cost for everyone?
So for those of you that are in areas that have schools that are not current Share members, we're starting this new project called Try Share. It is an expansion of our affiliate program, and we are offering the Share program to those members on a trial basis, not the software, but just the interlibrary loan piece, so they can start to utilize the program to see what value it would have for their students and their faculty, and so they can start to request books. It would be a trial program, so they could use it for 3 years, but the expectation would be that they would utilize the program, promote it to their students and faculty, and then make a presentation and showing the return on investment that they would receive of what that cost comparison of borrowing all of those books would be to for the Share membership. And so they can make that argument that per student fee would be well worth the cost of membership. And so that's something that we've just recently launched. It's actually, we've been having informal discussions about it. It's not actually been launched to our standalone libraries at for everyone quite yet. We're kind of taking that in stages because it's some staff oversight that's required on our end, but we certainly are trying to reach out to a lot of our standalone libraries. Specifically our schools, because we have a lot of schools that are interested but maybe need the support to offer it to their administrators. So I always say it's kind of like, you know, when you go to the mall and they're offering you that piece of teriyaki chicken and that smell gets you. We're offering the free sample of Share so that they can prove that we're a good value and that we would be a benefit to their school. So
from Lisa Grover, we have, when are you looking to implement the increases?
So this is would be to go out to membership in the later in the fall for review of a full proposal and then member vote in January. So the changes would take effect in July of 2024. So that's our next fiscal year.
Even with the increase, Share is a bargain. I couldn't become a standalone library at the cost of Share. I couldn't afford the increase in staff expertise alone that I would need to have my own database. And that's from Tina Hubert.
Tina, thank you. Appreciate that comment.
And then from Joel Picrora, I paid $7,968.26 this fiscal year. The proposal for next year is $11,202.38. It's a big percent increase, but on the flip side, it's less than a percent of my $400,000 plus budget. Something is probably going to need to be cut, but dollar per dollar, I can't think of anything my patrons can get more out of than access to the combined share catalog.
That's very helpful, Joel, to see, to get some of these comments on how you feel about these increases as well.
John Howard says, we get 4 to 7 tubs per day of interlibrary loan in and out. It is huge for us.
So for some of the comments that you're concerned about the increases, could we get some feedback if like maybe a more graduated increase might be helpful? Is that something that that you might find to be, for those of you seeing maybe over an increase of like maybe over 25%, do you think that that would be something that if we capped it and had it rolled out in a graduated manner, that would be helpful for you?
Well, while they're typing in their responses, Cassie, I was also going to say, I think one of the things that if we pull back even further than share into IHLS, into the state library, it's that area and per capita grant and what the big disparity is between what IHLS gets and what Rails gets. And I don't know if you know those two numbers, but yes, that might be helpful for people to know because ultimately, the money coming into IHLS is a fraction of what Rails is getting, then that means we're working, everything filters down below. You know what I mean? And, you know, we were receiving money equivalent to what Rails were getting, then this conversation probably wouldn't be so painful and these increases maybe wouldn't be so drastic. So,
yeah, that's definitely a consideration. And unfortunately, the way just for what Jill had mentioned, the way that that is calculated is area, which of course we kind of split the state in kind of in half. So we get Southern and Central and they get Northern and Central. And then Chicago Public Library is also a system. And so their algorithms on how they fund that is based on the total square miles. And so that's pretty equivalent. But the Rails is also per capita, so it's per person. And so, of course, the collar counties around Chicago and the northern part of the state that it's more populated, they get a significant increase for their per capita because, of course, in the southern and central part of the state, it tends to be more rural. They also have a large swath of areas that is unserved and rural, but their per capita is significantly higher than ours.
Okay. We've got from Joel, I'm seeing a big percent increase, but it feels like just kicking the can down the road. From Sherry Waldrop, we've got definitely, otherwise I'm making some big cuts in some other budget line. John Howard says, I won't need it, but if we think it would be an option for libraries that need it, I think that is important. From Bobby, we have, I need to look at the numbers and think things over. Thank you, and thank you for listening to my concerns.
Yeah, of course, Bobby.
From John, we have, that is a big picture issue. We need to be having conversations with our new Secretary of State and our state librarian and our legislators to see if a more equitable distribution is possible.
And I would like to address that, John. We actually just had a meeting at the state library week before last. It was fairly recent, and that is certainly a big picture issue, but that algorithm will not change. There's no plans to make changes at this time, and it's something that we've just been discussing with the state library for several years, but unfortunately, that is not going to change. They were very happy to increase the area and per capita for us. And so that was somewhat of an option to help with the concerns that we had been having down here in the southern part of the state, but the actual algorithms will not change. So thank you for that comment. It is certainly a big picture issue and something we will continue to have discussions with the state library as well.
From Sherry, we have, even if it's over 2 years, does it need to be spread out over a number of years? My increase is over 40%.
Yeah, that is a good point, Sherry. Thank you.
From Ryan, we have, yep, spread out over a few years, and percent cap seems to be the most equitable solution for all. And then from Ann Chandler, we have, IHLS currently has a $5 million reserve. Maybe something can be worked out until the resolution of this problem made.
Hey, Cassie, can you speak to what we can and can't use reserve funds for? Because I thought that was also an issue as well.
Yeah, so the I can't speak to the IHLS reserve that maybe Rhonda can jump in, but we have very specific requirements for our reserve fund because we do have a reserve fund that is for share, and we use that for technology upgrades. We try to be very proactive with our technology because we want to make sure that we have equipment that's going to last and is going to serve us and serve our members, because, you know, so many libraries do rely to make sure our servers are working, that we're not losing, you know, we're not running on equipment that is losing life, if that makes sense. And we're actually planning an upgrade fairly soon. So it's used for technology upgrades. It's also used in the event we need to switch an ILS vendor. We have no plans to do that, but there's always been, I think from the very beginning, an idea that that could be a possibility, and wanting to make sure that we have enough funds if it ever comes to a point that we think that there's another system that would better serve our membership. And so that we do have very specific benchmarks of how much money that is in our reserve. So we're not, you know, we say we don't want to be dragons hoarding our gold. You know, we have a very specific amount that's targeted. We are not at that amount. We haven't met that yet for both our technology upgrades and for the, in the event that we need to switch ILS vendors. But we do have benchmarks for that. So we know that we're not just, you know, holding on to too much money where we don't need it. And then again, the benchmark for 3 to 6 months in operating cash. We also thanks to Rhonda Jonassy. I want to highlight her for just a moment, because she found that the savings of moving our operating cash into the state Illinois fund actually is generating income for us, a significant portion of income that goes into our reserve fund that can help us meet that benchmark maybe a little bit sooner. And so for her to do that analysis and find us that money is significant. So I did want to just give her a pat on the back for that.
We've got from John, this is a difficult issue. The next time we start talking about not raising fees on an annual basis, we need to remember that this large percentage increases can be the result down the road.
That's a very good point, John. Thank you. Well, it seems like we don't have any new comments, but I do want to invite anyone who'd like to discuss this a little bit further. I'd be happy to meet with people individually. We'll also have town halls again tomorrow in the morning at 10 a.m. and then also in the afternoon. So if you think of another question this evening and want to join in again, you're more than welcome to, or feel free to send me an email if you have any additional questions, and I'll be happy to discuss that, or we can set up a meeting to chat. Does anybody else have any last minute questions or anything else that they'd like to, any other business that they'd like to address? Do we have any public comment or any announcements? Okay, and so our next meeting will be tomorrow, the town hall at 10 a.m. Via Zoom. It'll be the same link. So please feel free to register in L2 if you'd like to attend that one as well. So thank you everyone for this discussion. This has been very helpful for the Finance and Policy Committee and myself as we kind of navigate of where we're going to go next. So it's very much appreciated. Okay, thank you everyone. I hope, so Miranda, I'm gonna turn it back over to you to wrap up the meeting.
We'll adjourn at 11:04. Thanks everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.